So what I understand is that you wanted me to talk about kind of aging, sickness, death.
Health, happiness.
and becoming
happiness before death.
And becoming a young adult.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, the life stages that you go through. Okay. So I'll talk a little bit about my life, because then what I'm saying makes it real, you know, not just theoretical. So I think, you know, the when we grow up, when we're young, we're very curious about the world. We're very curious about people. At least I was, you know, it's like, what's going on in the world? I don't understand this world, why people do what they do. Yeah. And what's my purpose? Why am I alive? You know? And yeah, what am I supposed to do? What do I want to do? You know, these things not very clear in the mind. And I don't know about you, but I was so confused as a teenager and a young adult. You know, just so many questions going on in my mind. And they were really good questions that I wish the adults around me had thought about. Because I grew up during the Vietnam War. And so there were a lot of protests in America. People were against the war. Some of my friends were getting shipped off to fight in a war that, you know, the young people didn't understand. Why in the world are we fighting this war? There doesn't seem to be any purpose in it. It was the time also there was a lot of race riots in the States. So I was wondering, you know, why do people judge other people based on the color of their skin? Yeah. Why do people not like people because of what they look like, or because of what their religion is, or because of where they come from? You know, it just didn't make any sense to me. And the adults around me, I don't know, they all seem to be out to lunch. Yeah, it's an expression we use. You know, in other words, So, you know, the country we grow up in, what's happening historically in the world at that time, that really influences us as we grow up. You know, at least it did me, and really made me think a lot. It was also the time of the hippies and a lot of people taking, you know, starting to smoke dope, to smoke marijuana and take LSD and have those experiences. Because a lot of the young people were saying, yeah, what's the purpose of my life? And, you know, we don't want to just replicate our parents' life. You know, we love our parents, we're grateful to our parents, but that doesn't mean that we have to live our life the way they did. Yeah, it doesn't mean that, you know, our parents have certain expectations of us, but it doesn't mean that that's what we have to do, because that's what we may not want to do, you know? For example, you know, your parents may want you to be an engineer, yeah? But you want to be an artist. Well, what's wrong with being an artist if that's your passion? If you squeeze yourself and you make yourself an engineer, but you hate what you do, what purpose? Yeah. Then your parents say, well, you make more money if you're an engineer. An artist doesn't make as much money. But maybe, you know, as young adults, money isn't our purpose in life. Then your parents go, what? But I work so hard to earn money so you could have a good life. Why don't you appreciate what I did? I see all the parents nodding. Yeah. Yeah, that's how you feel, you know, when your kid tells you they want to go do something else. Yeah. Well, yeah, you worked hard, but you can't control your kid's life. And you know what? When they get older and you get older and they have to take care of you, they can't control your life either. So be glad about that. Yeah, otherwise you're going to have a role reverser and your kids are going to start bossing you around. So I think one big thing that we learn in life is we can aspire for certain things for people, but we can't control them. We can't make them do it. And everybody has their own unique qualities, their own unique interest. And, if they can further that, and learn what they're interested in, then they'll be able to make a really good contribution to society. Whereas if you squeeze your kids and make them do what you want them to do, they're going to be resentful. And the thing, the what they have passion for, what they can contribute to the world, they don't have the opportunity to do. Okay. So you might say, yeah, that sounds good, but okay. Okay. So first of all, I my parents, from the time I was came out of the womb, I was going to college, I had to university. There was no choice about that. Fortunately, I like school, so I didn't mind going to school, to university. And I'm glad I did. But when I finished, I was done. I could have gone to graduate school, gotten, I got my BA. I could have gotten an MS, I couldn't got a PhD. But that's not what it didn't inspire me to do that. So I took off and I traveled for about a year and a half. And that was a real eye-opener, because I learned not from reading books, but from meeting people. So I didn't read about other countries. I went there and I ate their food and I learned about their culture and I learned, about their history. And it was so interesting to me. It was a fantastic education, that time of traveling. Of course, it's not what my parents wanted me to do. But well, okay, she's young, she could go do this. Okay, so I came back, then I went to graduate school. Okay, she's settling down. Oh, finally, she's in graduate school, she has a job, she's working, she's earning money, she's married, okay, finally, and then the grandchildren should come along. Well, I was never much interested in having kids. You've got to, right, parents? You've got to have kids. But my mom always said to me, oh, you kids, raising you is really difficult. Just wait until you have kids and then you'll know what I went through. So I didn't have any. But besides, that's not why I didn't have any. I just didn't have, I wanted to learn about the world. I wanted to live. I went to a, after I came back and went back to school, got a job. Then on my summer vacation, because I was a teacher, I didn't have anything to do. I saw a flyer for a Buddhist meditation course. I knew nothing about Buddhism, but it was taught by two Tibetan lamas, and I had been to Nepal and India, where there's a big Tibetan refugee community. And I said, oh yeah, I read one of the books about, Tibetan culture. It's interesting. Yeah, I'm going to go to this retreat. So I went to the retreat, and one of the first things they said, the lama said, was, you don't have to believe anything we say. Ah, good. Yeah, because by that time, I was so tired of people telling me what I should believe. you know, whether it was my parents, whether it was my Catholic boyfriend, you know, whether it was people trying to convert me or whatever, you know. I wanted to have freedom to think about things myself and decide myself and develop my own intelligence. And so, you know, I did that. I thought about what they taught. I did the meditation practice. The meditation practice really helped me, you know, because it combined with the teachings and the meditation, then I really started to understand my life much, much better. You know, what's the purpose in my life? Well, even before I met Buddhism, I knew it had something to do with benefiting other people. I didn't know what, but that's why I became a teacher. You know, it has to be something to, yeah. But then when I started hearing Buddhism, and they talk about developing a mind that can have love and compassion for everybody, and a mind that, you know, wants to serve all living beings equally, it sounded like, wow, you mean it's really possible for me to develop that kind of quality? Because when I was young, everybody said, love thy neighbor as thyself, but nobody did. Yeah. You know, people went to church on Sunday, and then the rest of the week they were, you know, cheating people in business and doing stupid government policies, and, you know, and they're still doing stupid government policies in my country. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, huh? So, yeah, so I really wanted to, you know, think about things and experience life. So, you know, after this first course, it was 3 weeks long, I could go back to work, but I had a feeling in my heart, if I don't learn more, I'm going to regret this when I die. And from a young age, I had a strong feeling, I don't want to regret anything when I die. Yeah. So I quit my job, went to Nepal where they had a monastery. My parents are going, what's happening to her? We thought she had settled down. She had a husband, she had a job. Okay, he's going with her to Nepal, but still, you know. And then, so I went there, I studied more, I practiced more. I really liked the Buddha Dharma. You know, it just really, it met my needs, you know, and really because it showed a purpose in life. Yeah, be kind. And it showed how to be kind. It didn't just say be kind. It's like, oh, you want to be kinder to other people? You want to get over your anger and resentment? Here, think about this, then think about this, then think about this. There was a whole ordered way to begin to change what you thought and to change your emotions. So I wanted to learn this. And in the process of doing that, I decided I wanted to devote my life to it. So I went back to the States, you know, to clean everything up. And I said, Mom and Dad, you know, I'm going to go back to Nepal and I'm going to be a monastic. That's not the life they had in mind for me. I was supposed to be a doctor. Yeah, I was supposed to be a doctor. My dad wanted to be a doctor, but he wound up being a dentist instead. So I was supposed to be a doctor. And for a while when I was younger, I thought, yeah, a doctor is good. You can help people. But when I met Buddhism, I thought I can help people more if I practice a spiritual path. The help I can give is different, and I think this is the kind of help that I want to give to other living beings. Yeah. My parents, it's like, you can imagine. Yeah. What do we tell our friends? Yeah. This friend's, daughter is a lawyer. This friend's daughter does business. This friend's daughter is a doctor. And our daughter is going off to live in Nepal where they don't even have flush toilets. And she's going to be a what? Yeah. They totally couldn't handle it. Yeah. But I went anyway, not because I was being rebellious, but because I knew that this was something important for me in my life, and I didn't want to lose that opportunity. Yeah. And I also knew that if I lived the life my parents wanted me to live, you know, because I believed in karma, and I believed that, you know, there's an ethical dimension and an ethical cause and effect. And I knew that if I had continued doing what I had been doing before, I would have created a lot of negative karma and caused people problems. But if I was able to practice a spiritual path and do something about my anger and really increase my compassion for living beings, then I would be able to help my parents in a good way. Yeah. If I just lived the way they wanted me to, they might be happy, but in the end, it wouldn't have really helped them. But if I can practice a spiritual path, and then in this life or future lives, be able to help them along the path, then that would be repaying their kindness in a much better way. Yeah. So I went back to India and I got ordained. Yeah. Okay. So that's the first part of what you wanted me to talk about. Yeah. And I was very happy, you know, that I got ordained. Yes, there were a lot of problems. You know, I had visa problems, I had health problems. That's part of life. But my mind was so happy. Yeah. Being there. Okay, so then, you know, I was, I have to skip 30, 40 years. Yeah. Well, no, you asked me to talk about sickness. Okay, let's come back. Yeah, so when I was in Nepal, I got hepatitis. Yeah, liver disease. It was the kind of hepatitis you get when they don't wash the fruit and vegetables well. Yeah, so it was that kind of hepatitis. So I was living in a building at the monastery. Yeah, and it was a few stories high, but it was only wood planks between one floor and the next floor. So when your upstairs neighbors swept their floor, it all rained down on you on the lower floor. No toilets. Yeah. There was a pit outside with two boards across it. Yeah. So in the middle of the night when you had to go pee, you better be very careful where you put your feet. Yeah. Okay. So when you have hepatitis, you have no energy. I was like, you know, sleeping most of the day. And then somebody came in, one of my friends came in with this little booklet called The Wheel of Sharp Weapons. Okay. And it's not talking about the weapons people use to harm other living beings. It's talking about the sharp weapon is our negative karma. Yeah. When we lie and steal and cheat people, when we talk bad about people behind their backs, yeah, when we dump our anger and scream at them, yeah, when we cheat them in business, that kind of negativity, yeah. So the book talked about, you know, if you do this, then this is the kind of result that you will experience. So what was the result? For being very ill?
Cause.
Huh? I was ill with hepatitis. What was the cause for the result of being very ill, harming other living beings' bodies. So I thought, well, I didn't kill anybody. But then I thought, you know what my friends did on my 21st birthday? You know, 21 is 21 a big year here? When people do, yeah, like you can drink, you can do all these things because you're formally an adult. So my friends took me out, special dinner. We went to a seafood restaurant where you got to choose your own lobster and watch them drop it into the boiling water and cook it. And then that's what they do with, all these prawns and shrimp and lobsters you eat, they pick it up and drop them into boiling water. Okay. That wasn't too good, but it was my birthday, so, that was okay. Yeah. Then a couple of years after that, when I'm traveling. So we're traveling in Germany, and we're camping. We have a little stove. And we went to the supermarket and got a sausage, okay? So we brought the sausage back. We're going to cook it. So I start to cut it in pieces, and blood comes out. Germans have this thing called a blood sausage. And it hit me. I'm eating somebody else's body. Yeah. When it was the lobster, I didn't think about it. Now it was so obvious I couldn't ignore it. I'm eating somebody else's body. I wouldn't want anybody to kill me and eat my body for lunch. So that's when I became a vegetarian. It was before I met Buddhism. But just, being hit with, somebody else lost their life so that I could have lunch. No, I'm not going to do that again. Okay, so I became a vegetarian. Later, when I went back to the U.S., stayed at my parents' house. My mother said, "You're a vegetarian? What are you going to eat? What am I going to cook for you?" I said, "Mom, there's a lot of food that you can eat that's not meat, and she knows how to cook very well those other things." Okay. Then a few years later, my brother, who became the doctor, and he had kids. So now my parents are happy. Our son's a doctor. We have grandchildren. Yeah, they were happy until one of their granddaughters bit my mom. She was like 2 or 3 years old. And my mom was saying, "Sit still." And Lisa went, "Oh." Yeah, great. So they were happy. Then I had a younger sister. Yeah. So she got married too. She eloped. Not so good, but she's married. And she had kids. Ah, good. It's only our oldest daughter who's really a flake. She's a flake. What did we do wrong with her? Well, they thought they had done something wrong with me. Then years later, I'm living in other countries, serving at Buddhist centers, and then slowly I start to teach. So I came back to visit my parents, and some people had asked me to go on a tour, a teaching tour to give Buddha talks about Buddhism. So then my sister says, "Oh, Mom is really proud of you now." Yeah, I heard her tell her friends that when you fly into town to give a talk, that people pick you up at the airport. Mom was really impressed by that. Okay. Yeah. So gradually, my parents became okay with what I was doing. They were seeing that other people appreciated it, that I was making a contribution to society, that I wasn't starving, yeah, and that I was happy. And when you have a child, what more could you wish for than that they're happy? Yeah, even if they're not becoming your ideal of what they should be and be miserable, they're able to make good, they learned how to make good decisions. You taught them well. Yeah. They can think for themselves. They can make good decisions. And when they don't make good decisions, life is going to teach them. Life teaches us, doesn't it? Yeah. Don't we all learn from just our experience? And nobody can teach you that from a book. You have to live, and then you learn. And sometimes you make bad decisions, and then you have to go, okay, why did I do that? What was I thinking? Yeah, you know, next time there's that kind of decision, what do I need to think next time so that I can make a different choice? So you learn from your experiences, yeah? So my parents saw that, you know, I turned out okay. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, by that time, you know, I'm traveling, I'm teaching. At one point, oh, it was really funny. I went to visit my brother the doctor, okay? And so we're sitting talking, and by this time, we're both in middle age. And my brother says to me, you know, because I'm, you know, I'm a nun. I don't have a lot of money, you know. And yeah. So my brother says to me, okay, what do you want to be doing in 5 years? Yeah, what's your goal in 5 years? What do you want to have attained? Yeah, and he said, do you want to, maybe you want to set up your own Dharma center, you know, and do that. And I said, actually, Ras, I want to be a kinder person in 5 years. That's my goal for 5 years. I want to be a kinder person. He thought that was a little bit strange answer, but oh, well, he knew that he had a kind of nutty sister to start with. Okay. Okay, so time goes on and, you know, and I actually wound up, much to my own surprise, starting a monastery. Yeah. How I did it, I have no idea. You know, when we, you know, I had saved up the offerings people had given me over the years. So we used that, and then other people make contributions. So we were able to get some land, yeah, with a mortgage. Yeah, the owner held the mortgage, which we paid off early. So we saved about $30,000 in interest. Okay, so we move into the monastery. Yeah, the initial three residents, one human being, me, and two cats. Those were the original residents of the monastery. Yeah. Then slowly more people started to come and people got interested in the Dharma, and some people wanted to ordain and become monks and nuns. Yeah. And so they were able to take ordination. the monastery started to grow. Yeah, the place we had bought, it was a family's residence. Yeah, so it was a residence with a garage, with a barn, because it was outside. It's in a rural area. Yeah, so we changed the garage into a meditation hall, and then in the house, as more people came, that the house was our office, our bedroom, our dining room, everything, teaching place, everything happened there. Only meditation happened in the meditation hall, in the garage, yeah. And we continued growing, and so we needed another building with bedrooms, yeah. So one of our neighbors, an older man, who had kind of experience with construction and stuff, he came and he talked with us and he helped us figure out, yeah, you know, we need another resident building. Yeah. For the time being, okay, you know, the dining room, the kitchen, the offices can still cram in one building, but we need a new building to sleep. Okay. So then we constructed a new building. Yeah. Where did the money come from? It didn't grow on trees, but it amazed me, you know, it came from the kindness of other people. Yeah. And because when we were starting the monastery, we did not charge people to come. We did not charge people for teachings. Yeah. We founded it what we called an economy of generosity. So we give people food and a place to stay and the teachings and hope that they support us. And they did. Yeah. So we built the residence. Then more time goes by. Yeah. Well, having the offices and the kitchen and the dining room all in one building, it's not working anymore because there's too many people and we need a bigger kitchen and we need a dining room that also doesn't double as an office. Okay, so we have to build another big building. Same thing, yeah. We do that. Good, okay. So that building had a commercial kitchen and a big dining room and then downstairs more bedrooms because more people were coming. They were ordaining. We needed more rooms. And then we were having guests come to stay with us. Yeah. Okay. Then more time goes by. The meditation hall is getting crowded. Yeah. More people are coming. We need another building with a bigger meditation hall. So we built what was called the Buddha Hall. Did you bring pictures? So you can see the pictures later. Yeah, but it was a big building, yeah, and we just finished it. Well, almost finished. There's still a few details, yeah, but we signed substantial completion with the contractor, yeah. So in this whole process of starting the monastery, yeah, so where was I? We were
substantial completion.
Substantial completion. Oh, yes. So in the process of building the monastery, okay, I had to ask my parents for advice. Yeah, because when we bought the land, I didn't know what escrow was. I didn't know what a loan was. I didn't know about, you know, amortizing a loan and how to deal with the interest. But my parents knew all this. So I started asking them questions. So mom and dad are going, oh boy, she's talking about something interesting now. Yeah. Wow. We can talk to her, you know, about, yeah, this is how the loan works. And here, you know, how's the interest? And I'm going, wait a minute, we paid interest. Why are they the next month charging us more, you know, interest? Okay, so they explain all this stuff. So then, you know, as the monastery is getting bigger, we're building more buildings. Then my dad says, oh, my daughter is the CEO of a monastery. He was so proud. It's like, my daughter is a CEO. Oh, we just won't tell our friends of what it's a CEO of, but you know, she's a CEO. He was so cute. He was half joking, but it was so sweet, you know? So at the end, you know, I have a little slogan. If you give your parents time, they will grow up, which is exactly what they're saying about their children. Yeah, but parents grow up too, don't they? Yeah, you learn from your life. You're not the same person that you were when you were young. Yeah. Okay, so as we go forward, you know, we age. Yeah, we have sickness. I had hepatitis. That was my big sickness. Yeah. Then somewhere around 70, yeah, just before I turned 70, I started having some aches and pains. I had thought, I'm never going to have arthritis. Yeah. I'm going to be, you know, because I did stretching, I got exercise, I did lots of things. I'm not going to have arthritis. Well, you know, my body decided otherwise. Yeah. And I needed a hip replacement because it was bone on bone on my right side, you know, and that hurts. Okay. Thank goodness I had a fantastic doctor, really, really good doctor. Yeah. And he subsequently given a hip replacement to one, two, three other nuns, yeah, and also knee replacements. Yeah, he's our doc for surgery, yeah, but he's really good, yeah. And then, so now, you know what I said to you, you know, my legs kind of hurt. They will go into spasms and, you know, just clench like that. And when I wake up in the morning, it's like, creak, creak, you know, everything's creaking. And, you know, and then I just sit on a hot pad and the heat really helps. And then I still continued walking, yeah. He takes me for a walk every morning. Yeah, some people are walking their dogs. He, you know, is taking me, yeah. I'm not on a leash, though. But, you know, okay, so dealing with, you know, getting old and your body not doing what it did before. Because I used to, you know, even in my 60s, I worked in the forest. I could cut land branches and small trees and stuff. Now I just dream about that, you know. But I keep exercising. I keep doing what I can do. And I get outside and, you know, this is not going to stop me. Okay. And I dedicate my merit for the people who developed Aleve and Tylenol. Yeah. I guess here you have
Panadol.
Panadol. Yeah. But those people, over-the-counter painkillers, I am so grateful to those people who developed them. Yeah. Because once in a while, not every day, but once in a while, I need them, you know. I had never thought I would take over the, you know, do that. Me? No, that's for old people. No, I am not old. Yeah, I am not old. I am young at heart. It's just that my body's falling apart. Yeah? Anybody else have that problem? Yeah. What I think is more important is the state of your mind, not the state of your body. Yeah. And I, you know, looking at my parents' experience and other people's experience, I decided when, you know, I'm going to age. There is no way around that. Okay. No way to avoid aging. But I want to be a happy old person. I want to be a gracious old person, somebody who has a sense of humor, somebody who is at peace with themselves, somebody who is kind to the people who are taking care of me. Nobody has to lift me up yet and, you know, do those things. But one day, if I live that long, somebody will have to do that, you know, like we had to do for our parents. And I thought, you know, I want to be an old person that accepts what's happening and can be happy and can still have goodness in my heart that I can share with other people. Yeah. You know, I don't, because I knew my husband's, we're not married, by the way. Yeah, I became a nun, but we're no longer married. But his father was a bitter old man. Yeah, he was very bitter. And at, you know, he's solved his bitterness at 5 o'clock. He had the happy hour. He couldn't go out, but he stayed home and he would have a drink and, you know, and then kind of scream at his adult kids. Yeah. I was very kind to him. He and I got along well. But he was a big teacher for me because I thought, I don't want to be a bitter old person. I don't want to be bitter and take my anger out on other people. Yeah. I want to be kind. I want to have learned from life so that when young people come to talk to me, I can share what I've learned in my life so that I can encourage them to find their own special talent and see what it is that really gives them eagerness to learn and what they can contribute to the world. You know, I want, when people come to me, I want to encourage them to discover that and then to give to the world, to be compassionate, to be loving, yeah, to have good relationships. So that's what I'm trying to do as I age. Okay. Now you can ask these two how I'm doing. Really? They're forgetting how much I complain. I complain. No, I think I complain. Oh, you're blind. No. Oh, you see me perfectly. I'm perfect.
No, it's been a process, but right now. 3 years ago.
Yeah, life is an education. Yeah. And I used to complain much more. But now I know, okay, complaining does me absolutely no good. Doesn't change anything except make people mad at me. And then I complain more. Why are you mad at me? I didn't do anything. You didn't. Yeah. You're mad at me. Your anger is bad. No, it's my anger that's the problem. Yeah, why do I complain? Because, you know, there's some anger behind it. I want to control other people. I want to make them be what I want them to be. I want to make them do what I want them to do, you know? So everybody in the monastery has different jobs, yeah? But sometimes they make mistakes. No, I can't doesn't do any good to get angry. Just relax. This is not a world tragedy. Whatever I am angry about is some teeny tiny blip. It matters. You know, I'm the only one who's angry about the things I'm angry about. Yeah? There's over 7 billion human beings. Why am I only focusing on one human being, me, and what I don't like? Yeah, that's not very democratic, is it? Yeah. So I practice having a big picture, bigger picture. Yeah. The things that bother me are just very small. Yeah. And a trick I learned to do when I'm angry today is I think, okay, today's what, December?
Christmas
25th. Okay. Yeah. So 1 year ago, because we have complaints every day, right? Yeah, we complain about things every day. So 1 year ago, December 25th, 2024, what was I complaining about that day? Do you remember? I don't remember what I complained about 1 year ago. I complained about something because I complained. But I don't even remember it 1 year later.
I think you were complaining about the Neural Dampsher.
Probably. It was 1 year ago in Singapore. Some mistake. We
just like that.
Yeah. You know, but you know, whatever I complain about, it's some tiny thing. Why do I have to ruin my own joy by complaining, you know? Yeah. And like the world, you know, I expect everybody to do and say and think like I want them to act and speak and think. That's very stupid of me. How I can't control everybody and make people do that. Yeah. So it's like, relax, relax, you know? Okay, so then in the car driving over, we were talking about worry, okay, anxiety, and he said, why am I so anxious? And I said, because you're Singaporean. Yeah, so she was the first Singaporean who ordained at the Abbey. We have now three Singaporean monastics. She was the first one. So, yeah. So she sometimes got kind of anxious. And, you know,
kind of. Very.
Yeah, okay. Gosh, she said it, not me. She got very anxious. Oh, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got to do this, and we have to do this. And why is this? And it's like, oh, please, you know, just relax. Yeah, relax. And she goes, what's that mean? Yeah, yeah. Anxiety does no good. Yeah, because anxiety brings on your worry. What's going to happen here? What's going to happen there? You know? I don't have children to worry about, but I worry about the cats, you know? Yeah. And I worry about the disciples too. Yeah, I worry about them. What's going to happen? This one. You know, we have 21 monastics now. No, 22 monastics now, you know. Oh, I have more kids to worry about than you have. Okay, but why worry about them? My worry doesn't do anything. Yeah. My mother worried so much. It drove me crazy. You know, it's like, just relax. Yeah, I knew when I was younger, if I wasn't home at my curfew time, my mother would call the police. My daughter's been kidnapped, you know? Something happened to her. Police, go find her. Actually, I would be sitting out in my friend's car in front of their house. But so I dare not come in the door 1 minute late because that's how much my mom worried. You know, it really, please be kind to your children. Do not worry about them. Really be kind to them. Your worry just makes them
stressed.
And they don't like it. And your worry will make them stay away from you. Because every time they come home, you're interrogating them. What are you doing now? How much money are you making? Did they give you a promotion? Yeah. You know, you're just interrogating them. Now, of course, you mean well. You know, you love your kids. You want them to be happy. But they're going to find happiness in their own way. And they may not want to do the profession that you want them to do. They may not want to have children when you want them to have children. Yeah? The more, you know, we have one friend who's in-laws. Yeah, how come you aren't pregnant yet? You know, come on, when are you going to have, we want grandchildren. All of our friends have grandchildren. We want grandchildren too. Yeah, you know, did you ask for a raise? Is your boss going to, you know, give you more money? Yeah. Why are you going on holiday and spending so much money? Just, you're going to drive your kids nuts. Because you become an interrogator. You're interrogating them. And they don't like it. Yeah? Just as you probably didn't like it when your parents interrogated you. Yeah? I have friends who, you know, who are parents now. And, you know, we all thought when we were younger, we will not say to our kids what our parents said to us. And then they say, well, what comes out of my mouth is exactly the same thing my parents said that I didn't want to say to my kids. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. You know, I'm a parent now. I gotta check what I'm doing. Yeah. Yeah, this is not how to show love to my child. Yeah, be interested in their life and let them tell you what they're interested in. You know, your son wants to go parasailing. Okay, yeah, first thing you do, you want to jump out of an airplane on a parachute, you know? Ah, you can't do that. The parachute won't open. I know that. You know, you're going to land in the middle of the ocean. You're going to land on a mountain. You're going to land on a rose bush with thorns. Oh, you can't do that. You know, just relax. Yeah, they're an adult. They've checked it out. They've had friends who have gone parasailing. It may not be your ideal of fun. It's not my ideal of fun, idea of fun either. But okay, let them try it and see what it's like. Yeah? Okay, so just, chill out. You know that expression? Do they have that expression? And think, well, chill out. Sure. Yeah, just chill. You know, you're telling them. And you know what? Your health will be better if you worry less. Because when you're anxious and you worry, that affects your health. Yeah, because your whole body is on alert like this. Yeah. So if you worry less, You were good parents. You brought your kids up well. You taught them good values. You know, this is what I had to reaffirm to my parents, you know. Yeah, you taught me good values. You gave me a good education. I'm very grateful. you know? And what I'm doing in Buddhism is going further with what you taught me. It's not disregarding what you taught me. It's taking another step. But, you know, you gave your kids a good education and you brought them up well. They have good values. You did your job. Yeah. Be proud of yourself. Pat yourself on the back. Yeah. And then just love your kid. Just love them and let them love you. Okay. They may, as you get older and you can't do as much, they may start telling you what to do. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then, okay, so we got young adult, sickness, aging. What comes next? Death.
Lunch.
What?
Lunch.
Lunch. Oh. Lunch. I forgot all about lunch. Okay, maybe we should have lunch. Great. And you know what? It's over now. So all the happiness I had from eating lunch is gone. Yeah? Our happiness in life is like that, isn't it? We make a big deal about it. We finally get it. And then it's gone very quickly. So this is one of the reasons why in Buddhism, in Buddha Dharma, we say that attachment leads to disappointment. Yeah, because when we're attached to something we really wanted, I have to get that, give me, ooh, ooh. And you get it, and then it's never as good as you thought it was going to be. Yeah? Or you have to separate from it, or it breaks, or whatever. Yeah? So that's why we try and dampen our attachment, our clinging, our craving. Okay, other questions?
I have another question.
Yes.
Regarding your views on different religion. For me, I believe in Taoist and Buddhist. Likewise, I believe that all religion are teaching good or kind to people. What is your view on different
religions? Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. This is one reason why I like Buddhism, is we don't say, it's the best and everybody should be a Buddhist. And if you aren't, you know what's happening to you. No, Buddhism is not like that. And so the view is that all religions, just like you said, teaches kindness. It teaches generosity. It teaches ethical conduct. Yeah. And so these are all shared human values. And those are the thing that's really important, because that determines how we live as a human being. Yeah. So the idea is, if that, you know, some view helps you to be a kinder person, then that's very good. And so just like, you know, if you have a buffet, some people like rice, some people like noodles, some people want to eat pizza. You know, people like different foods. So in the same way, different religions are good for different people. Yeah. And so it's very important that we get along with people from other religions, you know, and that there's no threatening, there's no oppression or bias.
I have another question regarding aging. I have a mom, 86 years old. Now, last 2 years, her dementia condition is getting worse. So I'm looking at her to recall those during her young day, she take care of the family. And at this moment, and he's suffering for dementia. Luckily, he still can recognize me. Looking at her, is quite sad to me. That he always take care of the family, and right now, as a son, what's the best that I can
do? Yeah. Yeah, it's sad. My dad had dementia, and not real bad. Sometimes he was lucid, and then sometimes, you know, he got confused. I think just love them for what they are. Sometimes they say things that sound a little bit nuts. That's okay. Talk to them about that. Okay? I'll give you an example of what not to do, okay? My dad, whenever he had a bank account, had a bank that was very close to the house, yeah? But the bank's main office was on the other side of the country, in Florida, yeah? And so the statements about how much it was in the account came from the main office in Florida. So Dad would get the statement, and he would look, and he'd say, I live on the West Coast. What did they do taking my money to the East Coast, to Florida? And we tried, Dad, no, your money is just in the bank where you put it. You can go get it anytime. No, look, they said that it's in Florida. They sent the statement from Florida. They shouldn't have done that. I want them to send the money back to California. Okay, so my brother and sister would try and say, Dad, it's here, you're not seeing things correctly. Didn't do any good, yeah. So when they have those kind of ideas and they're wrong, just leave it, you know. If you try and tell them they're wrong, it just makes them aggravated, okay? One time, my dad was in the hospital and I went to see him. And he was lying there and he said, you know, other times he's very clear. We could, you know, talk about the news and things like that. But this time I went and he said, okay, now mind you, we're in California on the West Coast. He said, when I go from New York to London, what do I need to take with me? Now, if I just look at what he said, it's like, Dad, you're in California and you're not in New York. There's no plans for you to go to New York. And if you go to New York, there's no reason for you to go to London. I'm not going to say that. Yeah. I just said, I think the best thing for you to take with you when you travel is a kind heart. Yeah. And he said, what does that mean? I said, you know, you're polite to people, you care about other people, you smile at people, and, you know, you're generous and kind. And the kind heart, wherever you go in the whole world, is the best thing to take with you. And he was, like, so peaceful. Yeah, and he was fine. What I thought about later, well, actually at that time, was that maybe he was thinking about death and wondering, when I die, what do I take with me? Yeah, but because very often when people are old or when they're approaching death, they talk in symbols. Yeah, so New York to London, he's going from this life to after this life, yeah. So that's what I was thinking when he said that. And that's why I said, you know, take your kind heart with you. And he was happy, yeah. So, yeah, so it's really a thing. Don't argue with him. Yeah, it does, yeah. Okay, and just love them. Yes, it's sad to see them like that. But you just love them for what they are at that time. I mean, that's all we can do, and that's the best gift to give them to repay their kindness. Yeah. Yeah, and they want to get up and, you know, go drive the car. No, let's do something else. You know, like I know with my dad, getting him to give up the car keys was awful. You know, He did not want to stop driving. And we said, we'll drive you. You've driven us the whole time. You know, let us drive you. No, I can drive perfectly well. Okay, so doing that didn't do any good. So my sister went to talk to his doctor and said, oh, when Dad comes in to see the doctor next time, ask him, you know, to tell him that it's a really good thing if he stops driving. Yeah. And so the doctor did that, and Dad stopped driving. We weren't the ones that were the right people to tell him something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's too close to his kids, yeah? And for me, he wouldn't let me, you know, he got to the point where he was having some accidents in stores. A little bit embarrassing. So I would, you know, want to change his diaper, yeah? And he wouldn't let me. But he would let my sister. But he wouldn't let me. He would let my friends when they came, but he wouldn't let me, you know. Or I wanted to help him get in the car, and he wouldn't let me do that, but he would let my friends help him get in the car. So, yeah, I didn't take that as a sign that he didn't love me, because that I knew that wasn't the case, yeah.
Every one of us face this problem, sickness, calf pain, stress, disorienting. Mm. Among each family, we have members, we have parents, elders, friends, that in a very critical stage or in a very distressed stage of sickness. Start the when you visit them, they complain, all right? Is this doctor doing good to me or doing bad to me? Mm-hmm. Are they prescribing the medication to me correctly, or do I have to do it? Now, we are unable to explain or to comfort them with our words, mm-hmm. because we don't know what is wrong, what is wrong. Mm-hmm. And we also don't know their sickness, how painful they are, all right? And usually at that moment, we feel very much so-called unhelpful.
Yeah.
We can only say, well, you have to pull it through, which I think that word is
that doesn't
not
help.
Good.
No.
It doesn't help. So... every time when we face such a situation, something we ourselves brought into that stress. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if we get stressed and we worried, then they're going to pick up on that.
Correct.
And that's going to make them more stressed and more worried. I think the best thing to do is to say, you're at a good hospital, you have a good doctor, yeah? Your doctor is wise, they have experience, and they are seeing your condition and doing what they think is best. They care about you. Yeah? Yeah. When my mom, right before she died, she was always in and out of the hospital. But at one point, she was going in again. And she said to my sister, am I going to die now? And, you know, we had been expecting her to die for a while because she was in and out of the hospital. And my sister said, Mom, the doctors are going to do everything they can so that you can continue to live. And that just settled her mind. She did wind up dying at that hospital visit. Yeah. My brother, the doctor, wanted her to have more tests, you know, stick more things in her to take more tests. She said, leave me alone. And then we left her alone.
Now, in the reverse way, let's say I'm the patient now. I'm suffering. I'm having pain, very stressed and disoriented. Mm-hmm. I have very wild thinking. Okay. How can an individual in that condition, all right, to calm themselves down, to be able to so-called lighten up their thinking and let things be a self, so-called consoling and to ease the pain.
So, I think the main thing there, you know, if you're the patient, is depends on what you've done when you were alive. You have to learn how to calm yourself now. Yeah? And be able to say, like if you're getting angry, okay, that's anger. Anger doesn't help me, doesn't do any good. This is not the most important thing in the world. Yeah, I can relax and just let things be. And if you practice that while you're alive, then you're making a habit of it. So then there's better chances when you're old and a little bit disoriented, you fall back to what you're habituated to instead of falling back to the anger that you're habituated to.
This is what I'm trying to practice, right? To look things as a broadened anger in a different direction and to come into a peace, inner peace. But this teaching is only to ourselves. It is very difficult to pass on to family members, siblings, even to the person that's sleeping beside you. It is difficult.
Yeah, that's why you go to Dharma teachings when the teacher is explaining anger, you poke your spouse and say, listen.
Okay.
And then she pokes you back and said, you listen. Yeah. No. We have to learn the techniques for how to change our perspective so that we don't get angry, or if we get angry, we're able to let it go. Okay? So we don't have so much time together now. If you go to my website, yes. I've given a lot of talks about anger. You can find something. Also, the Dalai Lama's book, Healing Anger. Yeah, my book, Working with Anger. Yeah. And the thing is, when you read the book, you don't just say, yeah. or say, oh, yeah, that sounds good. Yes, but it's impractical. I can't do that. Next one. No, that one doesn't work either. Next one. No, I don't agree with that. Because my anger is right. When I am angry, I know how things should be. And that person is just being combative and uncooperative. And I've got to tell them to straighten up and get off my case and do what I want. Right? Yes. Yeah. I am right. Always right. Ah. Yeah? Yeah, I'm always right. But what you have to learn is when you start really looking at the reasons why you're angry, yeah, and, you know, why they just, you know, contradicted me, yeah, and I'm getting angry because somebody contradicted me or insulted me. Yeah. Why am I angry? Well, they contradicted me. Yeah. So what? Well, that means they think I'm stupid. Really? Somebody can't have another opinion? everybody who has a different opinion than you who is stupid, you have this kind of conversation with yourself. Yeah, they think I'm stupid. Are you stupid? No! Then why are you angry if somebody thinks you are, if you're not? Because they think I am. Why do you care about what they think? Because then nobody will like me. Ah, I see. Yeah, why else don't you like it? It'll ruin my reputation. Then my business will collapse. Ah, I see. So you feel threatened. Yeah! Nobody's going to like me. My business is going to collapse. Really? All of that is going to happen because somebody has a different opinion than you? Well, maybe a little bit of it will happen, you know. But you start having a discussion, you know, and question yourself about, you know, your whole view. And what we discover is all the time, what is it about? Me. They're harming me. Me. I am the most important thing in the world. Me. How can somebody have a different idea than me? You know, how can bad things happen to me? I've got to defend myself. Me, 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 me. And then you begin to see, oh, all this self-centered attitude, just thinking about me, that's making me pretty miserable. If I thought about others and broaden my mind to what other people are experiencing, yeah, and stopped being so self-preoccupied, stop being so worried about myself and making up horror stories about all the terrible things that are going to happen to me and my family because somebody has a, you know, likes food that I don't like. They have a different opinion than me, you know. Then you start to, you're like, okay, I've got to maybe broaden my view of the world here. Think about other people. Yeah. Yeah, because always focusing on myself doesn't really make me very happy. Makes me exaggerate every small thing that happens to me and making it a big deal. You know how you say to your kids, don't like make a mountain out of a molehill? Oh, but what do you do as parents? Yeah, you make Mount Everest out of a molehill. Yeah. And you begin to say, okay, I've got to start calming down this, you know. Somebody has a different opinion. It's okay. It's a free world. Where am I going to go where everybody thinks like I do? And if everybody thinks like I do, it's going to be pretty boring. Because I want to learn, and I learn when people have different ideas. Yeah. So the thing is, you need to practice this way of thinking when you're not in the middle of an argument. Yeah? And then when you notice that you're starting to get a little agitated, shift your way of thinking immediately. It's once you are full-blown screaming at somebody, it's very difficult to change your mind. You have to really leave the situation and calm down. But before that, you could say, oh, yeah, I remember thinking about this in my meditation. Yeah, this isn't such a big deal. And it's a free world. Just because somebody has a different idea doesn't mean that, you know, my life is going to collapse.
So during a meditation, it is also a thinking process of ourselves, of me, and others, as part of an exercise.
Yeah. And you begin to see that others and me are very much alike. We all want to be happy, and none of us want to suffer. And that's the deepest thing in everybody's life. I don't care who it is, if it's a human being or a cockroach or the man on the moon, everybody wants to be happy and not suffer. We're all alike. So it only makes sense that we care about other people.